This is going to be a really fun podcast because I've got an angler that is featured right here. Look at that's him right there, Darren Trosif, the catfish master of Minnesota. That's what I'm going to call him. Darren, I don't know if you want to be known as that, but you're certainly, that's how I know you. I've learned a ton from you. You helped me know what bites are kind of going on, and you've always been fantastic. I've always enjoyed our conversations. We're going to have another great one here. Let me just, this is Darren right here. I mean, look at, he's got a lake sturgeon behind him. He is also the holder of the catch and release lake sturgeon record in Minnesota. So I'm really looking forward to it. Darren's the man. Let's get into it.
This isn't another fishing podcast. This is another fishing podcast.
Well, Darren, thanks for coming on another fishing podcast. And yeah, I've first and foremost, I want to just thank you. You let me in on a bite last year on the Horseshoe Chain of Lakes, which is up Cold Spring area. Cold Springs? Cold Springs. Probably know that. But you let me in on a bite happening up there last summer. Catfish. I go up there to catch channel catfish in the winter primarily, but you're like, hey, dude, there's a fun bite going on up there. You just basically put some shrimp on a hook under a float, fish in 5 feet, basically like target about 5 foot of water, and it's on. And that's exactly what happened. The weird thing about it, though, is that it kind of just like all forms of fishing, catfish can shut off. And I caught some really good ones, and I probably could have caught some more if I had heavier tackle, but I took so long getting them in with like a medium light rod that you know, it just took a little bit longer. But I want to, number one, just thank you for that. And you know, you used to go up there quite often, and that's actually how I learned about you. I saw you doing ice fishing videos up there, and I was like, I got to get up there and do that. So thank you. And yeah, is that how you first really like fell in love with catfish, or what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, thanks for the invite here. I'm always so jealous looking at your camera and your setup there. It's always so professional. And here's paneling in the background.
You know, well as I do, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference for the internet. So I'm an old school television production guy, and this is all overkill.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So, but yeah, it's the Horseshoe Chain is kind of a unique thing. You know, the DNR, yeah, I don't want to say back in the 80s or 90s, they put all these catfish in there to control the bullhead population, and they did an awesome job. They ate all the bullheads, but what happened is they just flourished. And it's, you know, as you might know, it's a river system, and catfish like current and river systems, and they just exploded. And in fact, you know, over the last whatever 20 or 30 years, they've got to the point where the DNR actually decided that they want to try to get some of more of those fish out of there just because there's so many. So they actually increased the bag limit from 5 to 10 in an effort to try to reduce that population density. And I do think it has been helping from what I've found just as my last few trips up there is you're seeing more bigger fish and less density. And so I think that is working, but it's kind of a work in progress. So it is nice seeing those bigger fish, and hopefully the people take advantage of this bite are keeping the smaller fish and letting those bigger fish live, because it could turn into a really great fishery up there.
Yeah, I'm really impressed by the size, because do you want to talk about individual lakes up there? Should we just be generic with what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, here's the thing: they all have names, but they're all the same body of water. They're all connected, so it really doesn't matter, honestly. I've fished several of them. I don't even know how many there are in total. You know, maybe 10, 12, 15, but there's catfish in every single one of them. And when someone tells you the hot bite is at one, you can go to another one and find the same thing. So I kind of find my favorites just based on location and, you know, accessibility to ramps and stuff. But I don't think there's one better than the other.
Yeah, I mean, I have most of my experiences on Long Lake and on Browns Lake. You know, I've caught Browns Lake. I've seen guys catch good catfish out of. I've caught good catfish out of Long Lake. But for the longest time, it seemed like those fish were stunted. And now I guess it's what's going on is that those regulations are taking those smaller fish out. There's less competition. And so the idea is that these fish are getting bigger. Do you think that's what's going on there?
That's been my experience. Like, I don't know if that's what's happening, but that's what I've experienced personally. And just following some reports and stuff, it seems like, you know, that size structure and is going up and the density is getting smaller. I mean, you could go up there, you know, in the early days and catch easily over 100, but they're all the, 17 to 21 inch variety. And the last trip I went up there, I got several over 30 inches, you know, and not 100, but much bigger fish.
Yeah, that's fantastic, because when I was eaten up with it when I first ice fished up there and got into them good, and it's an experience. And they were not, you know, they were really, really fun, don't get me wrong, but they were not big. They're, you know, I'm not sure. I'm from the bass world, you know, so I'm like, everything's in pounds. So I don't, like, inches, I'm terrible. But, I mean, they were good-sized catfish. They fought like hell, dare I say, harder than any walleye. But it was, you know, I just, it was so much fun to do it when you get into them, and you got into them a lot there, just on average, you know, because there were so many in there. So can you kind of explain that, just that, how unique that is? It doesn't really happen a lot that you can catch catfish under the ice and them be so plentiful, and it's, you know, pretty consistent action. And then just kind of what happens, you know, during the year, like seasonal movements. They're in the winter, you know, you're basically looking for like deeper holes, kind of more of the basin area. But you're better at that than I am. Just kind of go through, if you could, you know, what catfish are doing in a system like that, like seasonally.
So, yeah, like you mentioned, so in the wintertime, which is how I got into fishing for them, because I wanted to, you know, I kind of like that niche thing of catching them through the ice. And like you say, it's you can do it, but it's just they're not really aggressive in the wintertime. But just the fact that there's so many in that system and competition, I think, kept them really active. So, yeah, they tend to, you know, kind of school up in these holes. And then, you know, every once in a while, they will go up into the shallows surrounding those holes. And it seems like the more aggressive fish that you find are kind of going up into the shallows a little bit to look for some food during, you know, some of the low light periods. But if you find the large school, I mean, you put your flasher down, it's literally, you know, 15 feet of fish sometimes. You can catch those fish, but it's usually the smaller ones. So then as the spring rolls around here, they slowly move out of those holes and they start moving up into the shallows. You'll find them in neck down areas and where the current is. A lot of time, this is the time of year, you know, where people are catching a lot of them from shore because they move into the shallows. And right before spawn, they're moving into the extreme shallows. You'll find them in, you know, 1 to 2 feet of water. And there's not just this lake, this horseshoe chain, but, you know, any lake that has catfish in them in the early spring, you know, a good way to find them is in the, you know, the dark, stained, warm water, the sloughs. People don't think they're in that shallow, but they will be very shallow right before spawn and get really active. And you can get some really big ones, you know, full of eggs. That's when you really see the really large fish caught. Then, you know, they'll go and they'll spawn and the bite will slow down for a while as they're doing their business.
What's that? When's the time period when they're spawning? What's the water temperature time of the year? We're up in Minnesota, but.
Yeah, basically right now. I mean, we're right in that midst of it, you know. Generally, Memorial Weekend to mid-June is usually when they start their spawn. In May, you'll see those big fish being showing up and being caught, and then the bite will slowly kind of taper off. And we're kind of in that period right now. We had a really late spring this year, so it might be later this year. But yeah, once they get done spawning, then they're transitioning back out kind of into that deeper water a little bit. And then they start focusing on, you know, wheat in that body of water. They're kind of relating to the weeds and they're using those weeds as their food source. And like you said, as we go into the summer, then they get really active getting ready for the fall. And that's when, to me, that's the best time to be out there is probably, you know, August, September, taking advantage of that bite we talked about.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I really appreciate you you giving me a heads up on that. And then I did a video, a YouTube video, and you know, it was just a blast. I mean, they were so aggressive. You know, that float or bobber. If, you know, sophistication is, if you're very sophisticated, you call it a float. But I mean, that bobber just go boom. You know, and it was just, I don't know. I love channel catfish. I know, you know, flatheads are kind of put on a pedestal a little bit more, but I love them all. And I've always been a multi-species guy. I probably know more just kind of, you know, what to do, I guess, you know, with bass, but really I love catching anything. And so we're very lucky in Minnesota. In some ways, you know, yeah, the winter, it's tough. It's so long, but we have such a plethora of opportunities around here, just as far as channel catfish. We'll get into the sturgeon fishing, but what kinds of other species is too, like bass and walleyes and pike. And it's like, obviously it's Minnesota, it's a fisherman's paradise, but you just got to be able to handle the winters. That's a big, you know, asterisk there, but you know, we're dealing with it. You know, we're Minnesotans, we're tough. But I wanted to, I gave you a little bit of an intro in the beginning, but I want to talk more about, like, you know, first, before we get in real deep here, you own Three Rivers Fishing Adventures, which is a guiding business. You guide on, it's called Three Rivers for a reason. You guide on the St. Croix, the Mississippi, and the Minnesota River. So you're a successful guide. Major kudos. I'm actually looking at your website right here. It looks great. I'm looking at this in the backdrop, this giant flathead that you're getting ready to release, which is awesome. But, you know, kudos to just, we kind of got to know each other. It seems like when you were just starting that guide business, and I'm super impressed with the clientele you've gotten. And, so just awesome job there. But you're also, so like I said, you're doing the catfish, sturgeon. You're an avid catfish and sturgeon angler. You hold the current Minnesota catch and release record for lake sturgeon at 78 inches. I wanted to kind of go into that a little bit. You caught that fish through the ice, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, and how many pounds do you think that thing was?
Estimate was probably 120 pounds. That's what we, by measurements, you know, kind of a length girth formula. So yeah, about 120 pounds.
Yeah, and so that's the very, is anybody like doing that on the Rainy River? So in here in Minnesota, there's basically two places, I guess, that most well known anyway, to catch lake sturgeon is the St. Croix River and the Rainy River. But I don't hear much about ice fishing. I don't know if it's anybody's doing it or it's allowed. I don't know. But is there any ice fishing going on the Rainy River for sturgeon?
There is. And if you go on YouTube, there's several videos of guys catching sturgeon up there on Lake of the Woods as well as the river. Part of the problem is the river sturgeon there. There's quite a bit of current in that river. So it's you do have to find specialty spots that don't slush up or don't have, you know, poor ice conditions. And you really got to know what you're doing in order to fish the river up there. But they do catch some nice ones in the river and out there on the lake, like in Four Mile Bay. And as you go further out, they do catch them out there, too. But what I'm finding is that, you know, these sturgeon, it's more like deer hunting. You know, you go out and you sit out there for many, many, many hours to catch these fish. They're not super active, but they are still feeding. They're just not schooled up and you're not catching, you know, 10, 12, 15 fish a day. You know, you're putting your time in, but there definitely are anglers up there catching them in the wintertime. And I'm seeing more of it also, as well as, you know, the St. Louis River, Lake Superior, and also the one coming on now is Ottertail, that system there. I saw some really nice ones caught on Big Stone this winter too. So
wow.
That's kind of the up and coming one.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know there was all that going on. That's great to hear. So yeah, let's kind of, the thing that's pretty amazing, when I first moved to Minnesota, I guess it was 2009. It was 2009, fall of 2009. I don't think, when did that season open on the St. Croix? It's relatively new. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's you're putting me on the spot here, but yeah, it's somewhere in that area. There was always sort of a harvest season, kind of that coincided with the Wisconsin season in September, October-ish, where you could go, because it's a border water, was kind of shared regulations with Wisconsin. So yeah, you were able to go out there and fish for them then. But that was it. That was it for the whole season. So they went ahead and expanded that for mostly catch and release, basically like almost, you know, nine out of the 12 months of the year. So that really helped out and expanded the enthusiasm to go out there and catch them.
Yeah, it's the numbers are really impressive on the St. Croix. I mean, you know, it's a pretty huge success story, I would say, just as far as, the, you know, what they've done with that fishery. It seems like it. You're much closer to that than I am. But as far as just the numbers and then the size, it seems to have increased. You know, I'm super impressed. You catch, what's your average when you're out there? You start fishing in September for them, right? Is that typically when?
Yeah. So the season does start up again, like I believe it's in July, June, July-ish. But I usually won't go out there just because of recreational traffic. But you can go out there and catch them right in the dead of the summer. And I have been seeing a lot more activity now, people going out in August and catching them too, which is kind of a new thing as well. But yeah, I don't start till September, mostly just because I'm doing a lot of catfish stuff. And also just because of recreational traffic out there, I don't want to deal with it. But on a typical night, you know, we're probably catching 5 to 10 sturgeon a night. And, you know, I have had some 50 plus nights, which is crazy. You know, those nights you do have those really high numbers. It seems like you're catching kind of marginally smaller fish, you know, and I say smaller, I'm talking, you know, 30 to, you know, 50 inches versus, you know, when I'm saying big fish, we're talking, you know, 50 to 60 plus. So the nights we catch lots of them, it seems like they're a little smaller. Maybe they're schooled up in sizes, but there's definitely an opportunity to catch a lot of fish out there. And it's kind of weird because it feels like there's so many and everyone's catching fish. But according to the tagging data, it kind of shows that that population isn't as big as people think, and we might just be catching the same fish over and over again. So that's kind of an unknown to the community.
And so how you're averaging, what do you think the average is, like, you know, like when, I mean, that's hard. It seems like that big of a fish to catch multiple fish, it seems to be pretty common on the St. Croix, you know, which is quite a treat to have that basically. I mean, you're within the city limits, you know, like it's kind of, it's urban fishing basically. And you're catching, you know, guys will catch a number of them at times, you know, and they're great big fish. You know, what could you put out a number that you think is kind of average, you know, number that you're catching?
Like for average size?
Well, average, like the quantity, I guess, more than anything.
Yeah, I would say probably an average trip we're catching, you know, 5 to 10, and the average size is probably, you know, right around 40 inches, probably 35 to 40 inches.
That's awesome.
And I mean, after seeing so many of them, to me, a 40 inch fish is pretty small. But to your average angler, I mean, that's a really big fish. And that's the thing I hear over and over and over again from people I take out is like, you know, we're right next to home here, right next to, you know, metro area. We hardly go out from the dock. We just go out into the channel and we catch all these big fish. They're just, you know, flabbergasted by that.
Yeah, it's an awesome fishery. They're a really unique fish, you know. So just the idea of catching essentially just a, you know, it's a cartilaginous fish. That might be a big word. It's actually a very big word for me, but basically it's the same. It doesn't have bones. It has the skeletal structure is made of cartilage, just like a shark. So it's a really ancient fish. Very, very interesting. And so if you're just a fish nerd, there, even if it's a small fish, it's an amazing fish to catch. So I just feel very blessed that we have that near us, you know. And I guess I need to go back to the catfish on the Horseshoe Chain Lakes thing here after I ask this question. But so the sturgeon deal, how are you catching those guys? Well, I forgot to ask you about, like, we should probably let people know how you catch catfish up at the horseshoe chain lakes. But so what's the typical rig that you're using to catch sturgeon on the St. Croix?
So, you know, going back to you talking about how special a fish it is, to me, I tell everyone, I kind of consider it the ultimate sport fish just because they're so easy to catch. And touching on what we use, I mean, it's a simple bottom rig. So we're using like a, you know, 5 to 7 to 8 aught circle hook, you know, a 15 inch leader, and just enough weight to keep it on the bottom. And you just wait for them to come along and suck it up. It's really as easy as that. You can generally go out and throw an anchor anywhere out in the river channel and just wait for these fish to come through. So, yeah, they're super easy to catch. They're big. They fight. They take well to catch and release. They're tough fish. I mean, they can be out of the water for a long time. You're not dealing with teeth when you handle them. You're not getting cut. I mean, it's really, to me, it's the ultimate sport fish. And to top it all off, sometimes they'll just jump completely out of the water when you're fighting them. So it's a lot of fun.
So what's your favorite bait to use to catch lake sturgeon? I've used just gobbed up night crawlers, you know, and that can work really, really well if you can't find, you know, like shad or what. Go ahead and like just get into that as far as like the baits to use for sturgeon.
Yeah, so I mean I kind of stick to what's native to the system. So generally everywhere you go, you know, a ball of night crawlers is going to be your number one bait. These fish are scrounging through the mud. They're digging up bugs, crayfish, you know, kind of, you know, just whatever they can find, they're scroungers. And night crawlers is, you know, generally they're eating the red worms. So like, you know, you see these guys sturgeon spearing over in Winnebago, some of those guys will actually take like core samples and try to find these red worms in the core of the,
wow,
you know, substrate. So they really get involved trying to find these red worms. So if you can find the red worms, you're probably going to find those sturgeons. So that's why night crawlers are such a good bait, because they're eating these red worms. But now in the St. Croix, it's just full of these gizzard shad. They're everywhere. And they come out in the late fall. They're almost cyclical, you know. They'll spawn, they'll get bigger throughout the year, and then they just kind of die off. They're basically, their main purpose is as a bait fish, and everything eats them out there, including the sturgeon. So as these giant schools of shad are moving around, you got fish tearing them up, all fish in the system, and they're wounding them. They're falling to the bottom. And I'm sure these sturgeon probably even eat these live shad as well too. So, that was one of the big things with the Minnesota DNR. We didn't have a way to catch these shad, and we knew they were good bait. So we did work with the Minnesota DNR in getting a cast net legalized specifically for the St. Croix River and specifically for gizzard shad. And that has really changed a lot how we fish. So I'm out there catching shad basically every trip, you know, beforehand. And they're pretty easy to find, especially with new technology. I went and got a live scope, and that pretty much changed how I got bait. You know, you just run around finding these schools of shad, and you can point the live scope right
at
the
amazing.
Throw the net. You just watch the net come right over the bait, and you're good for the night. So
that's amazing. Well, kudos on getting that passed through the legislature. I guess that's what you're more political than I am. I don't even know the correct term or not. The legislature.
Yeah.
So kudos on that.
That one actually had to go through. I don't remember if that was a policy or how that all unfolded. I just know we got it done, and it helped a ton. So
that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, they actually have like a work groups through the DNR for stakeholders. So they have different species. They have a, you know, a bass, a panfish, a walleye, a pike, and they also have a catfish one. And that was kind of one of the ones that the catfish group put through. So yeah, it's definitely, there's a lot of hoops you got to jump through, you know, with permitting and invasive species and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's well worth it, and it's better than not being able to do it. So
yeah, for sure. What are you, as far as your gear for sturgeon? And again, we need to go back to the horseshoe chain of lakes channel cat discussion here after I quiz you on all the sturgeon stuff. But what are you using as far as equipment? What's like your preferred equipment for open water sturgeon?
So I use like a 8 foot 7.5 foot to 8 foot fiberglass rod. The particular ones I use are Mad Catz rods, and it's any heavy, you know, catfish rod will work. You know, a lot of guys use musky rods. Those work fine. Thing you got to be careful with is, though, some of these graphite blanks, if you put too much pressure on them, I've seen a lot of them snap. So that's why, you know, a lot of us use fiberglass rods, just because they're a little more forgiving. When you do hook into like a 70-inch fish, you want to be prepared, because there's no drag stopping these fish. So you can kind of be oversized at times and undersized at times. It's kind of hard to cover the whole, you know, 30-inch to 70-inch fish. You kind of want to be in the middle ground and be ready for either one of them. So, but yeah, 7 to 8 foot, you know, medium heavy to heavy rod. And I prefer using a spinning setup myself, just for, I found that it works better with my guests in the boat that I take out on guide trips. I can kind of switch the handle from one side to the next if they're more comfortable that way. It's easier for them to cast, and there's just a couple more benefits of using a spinning rig. But bait casting rods are just as popular, and I really don't see a preference either way. I think they both work fine, and really you just need something with a lot of drag and something that's forgiving, and you just hold on and tire those fish out.
So when you go to the hard water season, when you get ice on the St. Croix and you're ice fishing for them, what kind of gear are you using then?
There are a few specialty sturgeon rods that companies have been putting out now. You know, large pike, lake trout rods. You know, we're talking probably 40 to 50 pound test in like a 4,000 series reel. You can go undersize and oversize there as well. You kind of find out after you catch a few what your preference is, and everyone has their own preference. But I'm using a 40 to 42 inch, you know, extra heavy rod with a 4,000 series reel. So, and for this, a little controversial, for the ice, I kind of like to use a treble hook. I find that I do get a little bit better hookup percentage. And I don't know, just the way they eat the bait, and you're fishing vertically straight up and down. I feel like sometimes we do get a little better hookup ratio using a treble hook, and I can pack a little more bait on there as well. So you do end up, you know, a fish will come by, and, you know, as you're fishing vertically, their peck fins, you can see back behind me here, you know, I don't know if you can see that or not, but
that's an awesome print.
You know, they're like big airplane wings, so they come across, and sometimes they'll run into your line, and no matter what kind of hook you're using, sometimes you do end up getting a foul hook fish, and that does happen. So it's kind of hard to avoid that sometimes.
Yeah, it's a weird deal. I know some guys like to use just like essentially like a jigging spoon, you know, and that's just sitting down there. It's not providing any action. It's just there as a weight. And then you gob up a ton of night crawlers or whatever onto the treble hook. And that's, you know, they come by and they, you know. The weird thing about it is, yeah, you're fishing vertically, right? So your line is going straight down. And there's a current there, so it'll bow. But I think a lot of the problems will be when, you know, that fish, its mouth is below. It's got its nose that will hit that line, and you might think you have a bite, and it's actually just, you know, the sturgeon hitting your line, and he might be getting ready to eat it. But that's always the weird thing. Like, what's the best rig to have a better hookup percentage, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I've even thought like a Carolina rig or something, or, you know, your typical like bottom rig that way, you know, I don't know. I don't know if
the problem I found with that is if you have too much slack behind your sinker, sometimes they can pick it up and you don't even know that they picked it up, you know, because they got that slack there. So honestly, what's kind of changing for me is using a live scope. Now I can see what they're doing.
Wow.
You know, I can, you know, I
That's
can
awesome.
see, you know, which rod they're on. You know, if they're tail slapping the line, I can tell.
That is so cool, man. I hadn't even thought about live scope for ice sturgeon. That's awesome. That is such a great idea. And then if you have like a hub style shelter or something, and you could set up a TV or like a big, my lord.
Oh, yeah. You'd be surprised at the setups guys have out there. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's really, really cool.
Because you're waiting for so long, you know, guys get bored. And that's why some of these goofy rigs you see people come up with, it's because there's nothing else to do. You just come up with things. Oh, I think I'll try this, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. So what can you go into just the seasonal movements? Now, I know there's a lot of unknowns with sturgeon. They're kind of, I mean, at least that's what I believe, right? There's a lot of unknowns as far as how they're moving. In the system, what do you know about that? Like, what do you try to look for in the open water season and then the ice fishing?
Well, the one for sure known is that they're moving upstream to spawn every spring. That's a pretty much given. That's pretty well known, you know, throughout the community, is that these fish go upstream and into tributaries to spawn. And it's quite visual. You know, they spawn in a foot of water, so it's easy to see that they're all spawning, you know. And after they spawn, they tend to move back down into the basin area, and kind of that's their home for the summer. And then they get active again in the fall. So it seems like early spring and late fall are the two major activity patterns that I'm looking for, and that's when I'm targeting them because they're more active. And it's kind of like every other fish that, you know, that early and late period is in when fishing really gets good. So now these fish on the rainy system, they're coming out of Lake of the Woods, and it's really apparent what happens to them every spring. You know, they're coming into the Rainy River, and you can really ambush these fish as they're coming through, and it's unbelievable. I run a sturgeon contest every spring, and, you know, there's, you know, 30 to 50 guys that join it. It's this catch and release thing on a Fish Donkey. And I tell you what happened this year, the season ended May 15th, I believe, or something like that. The last 2 weeks of that season was unlike anything I've ever seen in my life when it comes to sturgeon fishing. I mean, guys were catching, you know, 20, 60-inch fish a day, and they were catching fish over 70 inches. It was just... it blew my mind, and I just think that's just going to get better and better, and it's unbelievable.
That's awesome to hear. I did want to touch on just the catfishing, just as far as up at the Horseshoe Chain of Lakes. Just what are you as far as equipment in the open water deal? Like, what are you using? You know, typically, and then what are you using for ice fishing for channel cats?
So for the channel cats up there, what I've been using, and I haven't done a whole lot of the open water thing. I was kind of turned on to this bite, kind of like you were. And so what I've been using is just like a medium to medium heavy walleye rod with a, you know, a 20 to 30 series spinning reel. And, you know, I do like to go a little heavier on my line because they fight so hard. So, you know, I was using 20 to 30 pound braid for that. And like you said, it was, if you can imagine like spawn crappie fishing in the shallows where you're just using a float and your bait, you know, 2 feet below your float, I was almost doing exactly what I was doing going around shorelines, targeting crappies in the spring. I was doing the same thing I was doing for these catfish. And you would toss it up, and I was fishing docks, weed lines, snags kind of coming out off the shore, like you would maybe like for bass. And you just toss that bobber up there, and if it doesn't get hit within 10 to 15 seconds, reel in and cast to your next target. And it's like you say, it's, they just, they hit that thing and it, your bobber's gone. There's no tap, tap. You just look and it's under.
Yeah. It's absolutely phenomenal. So fun doing that. Are you basically using that, you know, a float, and Minnesota is different, you know, cause we don't get crazy hot up here, you know. Our summers are shorter. Are you doing that float deal, or guys doing that float deal throughout the whole open water season primarily? You know, are they pretty much shallow, or do you have to go, I mean, you know, later in the summer or midsummer, are they going deeper and you're fishing like a bottom rig, slip sinker rig, or what's happening there?
I do think you can catch them like that throughout the season under the float, and especially like low light periods. I think they're kind of working these weed edges probably towards dusk and dawn. I haven't done a lot, and our rivers are flooding here right now, and that was one of my things on my list to do, is maybe try to get up there and do that this spring and try to get a feel of what the pattern's like up there in the spring. But I just haven't had a chance to get up there. It's like an hour and a half drive for me from home here. So it's definitely on my list, but it's also hard to do that real often because I have the Minnesota River a mile from
my house. You're pretty much right in the middle of some amazing fisheries, right? For sure. So getting into the winter for those channels, what is the typical setup you're using to ice fish for channel catfish?
I would say it's your typical walleye rod. You know, you'd use just a jigging spoon, a small jig, and you just basically pinching off minnows like you would a walleye, fishing for walleyes, you know, fathead heads, crappie, minnow heads, and just kind of jamming them on the hook. And one thing I've found is they will react to your jigging up to the point where they get close to your bait, then they don't want to see it jigged. So I kind of try to get their attention, see them moving towards it on the sonar, and then I just completely go and stop everything, and they'll come up, and I've watched them on a camera. So if you're, you know, your bait's here, they'll come up and they'll just kind of sniff it, they'll feel it with their whiskers, and all of a sudden they'll just kind of go vertical and they'll kind of go and they'll eat it. And sometimes you'll see your bobber tip sideways, and that's them kind of grabbing it. And they, like, they're not super aggressive at times, and you have to really pay attention to your bobber, and sometimes your bobber won't even go under, it'll just start bobbing. So that's what I've found to be the most productive. Now, I know guys are out there using spring bobber rods or really flexible tip rods, and they're out there actively chasing these schools, and you can be really successful doing that too as well, especially with live scope. But there are days where they're pretty finicky as well. So it depends day to day. I guess that's
best. That's my experience too. I basically would have a dead rod, which is just a rod just, you know, with a float. Usually I've been on that dead rod. I really liked the Northland creep worm. It glows really well. And it's just what kind of hook is that they have on it? It's just it looks kind of like a worm, a quarter of a worm, you know, it's just plastic or whatever, lead. Yep. I don't know what it is, but it's painted. And you can glow it, and I'll just, you know, I'll put on a half a minnow or something. I'll take the head off or something, or whatever. I'll use bits of a minnow on that, and drop that down under a foam float. So that's my dead rod. And then I will on the jigging rod. I've used, like, what are some of the different spoons? Just a regular. I don't know, typically was using like an 1/8 ounce, I guess, like a walleye spoon, something like that, with a minnow head on it. And then I would have a spring bobber because, you'd see them come up. And then I would just watch that spring bobber. And if you're not familiar what a spring bobber is, there's different kinds of spring bobbers. But the ones that I use are actually a spring that you have to kind of thread your line through out of the rod tip, and then thread it through there and then put it back on the rod tip. But what that allows you to do, it's just a little spring and your line's going through that and allows you to see the most subtle bite. And that's what's happening with these guys in the winter. They can be lethargic and just bite very, very negatively. So that spring bobber, you'll get their attention, and then once they come up to it, I would just kill it, and then I would just watch that spring bobber, and that spring bobber would do it. And sometimes that spring bobber would go up, so they're feeding up, and, you know, with it. But it, in either case, you're learning that spring bobber is alerting you to a very subtle bite that you would not have been able to detect if you didn't have that on there just with a regular rod tip, because fish in the winter are just they're you know, much more just they're slowed down. So yeah, that spring bobber I found it to be a pretty good tool.
Yeah, it definitely helps. And there's definitely days when they're very finicky. And some days like that, one of our more productive baits is actually we take frozen chicken livers and we're just cutting little pieces of these livers on and putting them on the hook. And that, like I said, we've had 100 plus fish days up there using chicken livers as well. And I did a YouTube video where I actually took some hot dog pieces and cut them up and I kind of soaked them in some scent, and that actually worked too. I caught a few that way too. So yeah, I don't know that now the flatheads will kind of go into like this hibernation state, you know, in the wintertime. And I think part of that is the channel cats do that as well. Like they definitely slow down and get lethargic, and they'll still eat, but it's definitely different from the summer. And I think the further north you go, it actually gets, you know, worse as well. Like, you know, the Red River up in, you know, Grand Forks, as you go up into Canada, up by Lake Winnipeg, you know, that's one of the best channel cat fisheries in the world. And these guys struggle to catch them in the wintertime.
Wow.
They have a really hard time. So I think they just kind of completely shut down up there.
Yeah, that's I hadn't heard that. I had wondered about that, if there's anybody doing that. But yeah, it's I don't know. They're really fun if you have a fishery where there's enough of them, you know, to catch through the ice. It's a really unique thing to do. So what is it about like catfish and sturgeon that just really trips your trigger? Like why is it that's what your main target, and when did it happen for you that you just fell in love with these fish?
So what happened with me is I grew up on Lake Vermilion and I fished up there like my whole childhood, and you know, mostly fished walleyes, bass, you know, panfish or whatever. Then I really got, I worked at a resort up there and I got into fishing for big pike, and then that's when the muskie boom started and we started catching muskies up there as well. And that really kind of turned me on catching these big muskies. I really enjoyed catching those fish. And, after that, I ended up moving down here to the metro area, and there was not a lot like that down here. So I was doing some shore fishing in the area. I lived in Shakopee, and, you know, someone mentioned I should go down to the river and try, you know, fishing for catfish down by the river. And I'd never caught a catfish in my life, not even a bullhead I haven't even caught. And so one day I had some dead sucker minnows, so I thought I would just go ahead and try doing that. And so I just went down, found a spot along the bank, and, you know, we didn't have Google Maps or anything like that that time, you know, when I forget, that was like maybe, you know, 1999 or something like that. I just found a spot on shore, threw out some sucker minnows on my in my bass rod, and just by chance I ended up catching a really big fish. It was probably 45-pound flathead. So
awesome.
I ended up breaking my rod, and I was, you know, up to my waist in mud trying to, I didn't know how to handle this fish, you know, and I just lucked out. I had someone coming down the bike trail, and I had one of these old disposable cameras in my box, you know, just in case I would catch a big fish like that sometime. And they were able to snap a picture of me as they were coming down the bike trail. So I did get a picture of it, and
nice.
I went home and my wife thought I saw a ghost the way I was acting. She's like, what?
You were a changed man.
I was hooked after that, and I ended up going to work the next day and telling a coworker about it. And it turns out he ran this catfish league out of Belle Plaine, and he invited me to join the league. And that's where I pretty much learned a lot about catfishing, is joining this catfish league and fishing with different guys every night of the week and learning their tactics. And it was a really good experience.
So you know, I was talking about how lucky we are to have just amazing fisheries around us living where we do. But, you know, your guiding business is called Three Rivers Fishing Adventures, and you're targeting the St. Croix River, the Minnesota River, and the Mississippi River. So let's kind of turn the discussion to flatheads now. And the Minnesota, all those rivers got flatheads in them. Do you think there's one river of those three that's better for flatheads than the others?
Yes.
I figured that would be the, yeah. I'm not going to speculate, but yeah, it's, so go, if you would go into, so we've talked about channel catfish. We're good on the channel cats now. They do things different in river systems, but I think we're good on the channels. Let's really dive into flatheads now. I think we've covered sturgeon well. Let's dive into flatheads. Flatheads are an amazing fish. They're just very well designed for current. They're flat heads. The reason they have a flat head is that they're just supremely designed to just hold in current. And so, you know, the Minnesota River is this dirty, you know, it's silty. It's got tons of just fallen trees in it. And you look at it and you're like, wow, you know, what is living in here? And the reality is there's giant, massive, just enormous monsters living in the Minnesota River. They're living in the Mississippi River, living in the St. Croix. But it's just, and you're not far from any of that. So just kind of go into, okay, what are flatheads doing, you know, and like go through their seasonal movements and then how the hell you catch them.
Yeah. So I mentioned, you know, in the wintertime, they're kind of in this state of hibernation. They get in these big schools and they just lay dormant. You know, once the water temp is below 40, there's scientific studies out there showing that they just don't eat. They just quit eating. They school up, they sit in there until the water temp gets, you know, maybe up till 40 or 50 in the spring. And then they slowly, one by one, they kind of move out of these schools and they get ready to start making babies. And that's the only thing on their mind is eating and making babies at that point. So, you know, catfish, when people think about big catfish, flathead catfish, just catfish in general, they're thinking dog digs the summer, you know, July, August, you know, bugs are bad. You're out there in the middle of the, you know, summer. That's the catfish time. Well, I think the best time is right now. If you want to catch a trophy catfish, it's right now till probably the middle to end of June when they start spawning. They're active, they're moving, they're eating, they're getting fat. Right now is when you want to be targeting them. And unfortunately our rivers are flooding right now and that people are getting a few right now, but it's tough until that river gets back within its banks and you can start, targeting some structure, creek mouths, things like that. Then you're going to start catching them. And so the other kind of, myth I would say about flathead catfish is that you have to have big lively bait. And don't get me wrong, big lively bait works good and they will trigger a bite. These flatheads will find this, especially if they're on the hunt, you know, working these creek mouths or shallow flats after dark. But you can catch some really nice big flathead on a big chunk of cut, you know, sucker or any rough fish from the system. You know, you chunk that up and throw it out there, it's a good way to catch a big flathead catfish as well. And that's how I caught that big first one. I caught was just a chunk of sucker, probably that big, and you know, you're catching 45 50 pound fish. So don't think that you have to go out and buy, you know, these big expensive, you know, 12 to 15 inch suckers or go out and find live bullheads. Yes, they're good, but if you can just find medium suckers and cut those up, you're also going to be able to, you know, catch these flatheads. And the bonus is you're going to catch some nice channel cats as well in the process too. So, but yeah, those fish are active now. They'll move in to spawn, you know, probably late June, mid to late June, early July, they start spawning. And then there'll be kind of a lull as they're spawning. They're cavity spawners, so they're going into the side of the banks or digging holes or they're going into trees or tires or barrels or whatever. And you see these guys down south, they noodle these fish, and that's how they're doing that. That's what noodling is. People think they're hand fishing. Well, kind of, but they're actually targeting their spawning habitat is what they're doing. So even like the guides down there, they have barrels that they just sink in these shallow water. And the flatheads will come and make their nest in these barrels. And then these guides know where these barrels are. So it's just like a milk run. They'll go to each one and they'll find one that has one in it. And what you do is you put your hand inside of this barrel and the fish is actually trying to protect its nest. So that's why it bites and latches onto you, and then you're able to pull it out of there. So people think they're, you know, pulling it out of the mud or hand fishing, catching them. Well, it's basically just a response by these fish kind of protecting their nests. So that's kind of a myth as well for these flathead catfish, you know, that they're not really hand fishing. They're kind of pulling them off their beds, so to speak. So after they spawn, then they get really territorial. They'll go to their snag of choice. And a lot of times it's the same snag every year, this big log jam. And they'll, these log jams might have, you know, one, two, three fish, maybe kind of like a muskie would, you know, on a hump or whatever. And that's their home. And they'll come out of their home, they'll eat a big meal, then they'll go back to their home. So sometimes this fish, you know, as it's sitting in this snag, you may only get an opportunity to catch this big fish maybe once every 2 or 3 days when it's coming out to eat. So the fishing does slow down in the summer, but you do see some really big fish caught, you know, as they're out on the prowl looking for a meal. And then as we go into fall, they just kind of do that, whatever they did in reverse from winter. They're moving towards their wintering hole and eating and getting fat to sustain themselves for the rest of the winter. So the fishing does pick up quite a bit in the fall as well, too. And by that time, I'm kind of turned into sturgeon mode. So I kind of miss that really good fall bite just because sturgeon fishing is so popular and I find it much easier. So I kind of go over to that mode. But, you know, you can catch some really nice flatheads right into, you know, probably early to late October. An interesting thing I'll just mention here is there's the DNR has been doing some tagging studies just down the road here, you know, a couple miles down the road in the Minnesota River. And one of the stories I read, a guy did a presentation for our group one time, and he said he had, you know, 10 to 15 of these flatheads tagged, and they're radio tagged. So he was actually able to exactly pinpoint where these fish were. So he would go out every so often and find out where these fish were. And as the summer progressed, he knew exactly where each one of those fish was going to be, just where they were before. You know, they were that there's so much of a homebody that he kind of knew exactly where these fish were, what snag they were going to be at. But then as fall came around, he went out, and then one day there was two or three fish missing. They were just gone. And then he went out the next day, and all of them were gone. Every single fish was gone. He couldn't find them. So they had just gone to their wintering hole, and it was just like a 1 or 2 day event. So what was I found interesting about that is, like, you could be out there fishing this area and you're fishing for fish that aren't even there. They're just gone. Wow. So that scares me a little bit in the fall. Like, you know, they're just not there.
Yeah. So what do you think about as far as, like, time of the day? Is it important that you target flatheads more at night, morning, evening? What are your thoughts on that? Like, everybody thinks, oh, catfish, you got to fish them at night. Is that true?
I think that's also seasonal as well. Like, right now, I think you can catch them all day right now. I think, obviously, like, dusk and dawn are better, the low light periods, the fish get more active. And I think there is something to, like, lunar patterns and stuff, and I don't track it or anything, but I have seen enough, like, patterns, even as far as barometric pressure. And there is a formula there that if you really dig in, I think you could be successful. I just don't have the time or energy to track all that stuff. I do think there is something there. And I do think you can go out all day right now pre-spawn and you can catch them all day long if you want to. I do think after spawn that the nighttime is better. The low light period is better. I feel like, you know, the water's cooler. They're trying to, you know, cool off a bit. They go up into the shallows and they're chasing bait fish. And I think the spawning of the bait fish and the bait fish cycle also has a factor in that too, where they are set up. And, you know, wherever there's food, you're going to find these flatheads. So I think that's really the ultimate thing, is finding the food, especially when they're out on the hunt.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, finding them is a huge deal, but once, you know, you've set up on a spot, how are you catching them? What's the gear to be able, I mean, these fish get massive, like massive, like they're one of the biggest fish in Minnesota. So the rod, reel, line, like shark hooks. It's completely different than like what you're, I mean, it's like saltwater fishing. Just go into that. When I first started flathead fishing, I was just like, this is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think you can kind of sort of get a little out of hand with that too. But yeah, I really like to match my gear to the bait I'm using. So if I decide I'm going to use a big 12 inch bait, you know, like a 12 inch sucker, I'm going to want a 10 to 12 odd hook to put through that thing, or maybe even sometimes a double hook rig, kind of like a musky sucker rig, you know, something like that. But I think you should match the hook to the size of your bait you're using, because if you're using too big of a hook on too small of a bait, that big hook will kind of really wear down that bait and it'll end up dying on you. And if you want a live bait, that's not ideal if your bait's dying. So generally my go-to hook is probably a 7 to 9 or 7 to 10 aught kale type hook. I like that they have a big gap. And that's a K-A-H-L-E, kale it's called, Kali. There's different ways to pronounce it, but I do like the big gap. These flatheads have giant mouths, giant lips, and you want the most gap in that hook when you set the hook that you're not pulling it out of their mouth. And you can use circle hooks. People are using circle hooks, and there's a lot of bit of controversy whether you should use a circle hook or J-hook. And the one thing that I get concerned about with using circle hooks is sometimes these flatheads will come up, they'll chomp your bait. And when they chomp your bait, sometimes it's pretty violent. You'll just hear this big thump of your rod, and that's the flathead sucking it in. If you ever watch a largemouth bass, like suck in a Senko or something, you know, that's kind of what they're doing to these 10 inch bullheads, you know, it's just gone. And you see that big thump on your rod, but sometimes they'll do that and they'll come right at you. And you're reeling and you're like, I don't feel anything. Well, that fish is swimming towards you. Well, if you got a circle hook, you're not really able to set a circle hook because of their design. They'll just pull right out of the mouth. So that's kind of why I tend to lean towards a J or kale stike type hook, is you can reel down and you can pull a hook out of that bait and into the fish's mouth while he's coming at you if you need to. Now, if you have the opportunity to wait for that fish to swim away from you, that's your best bet, is waiting. That's what we'll normally try to do, is wait for the fish to swim away from us before we set the hook. But sometimes you don't have that opportunity because you're fishing in, you know, these big snag infested areas. And if you let them go too far, you're not going to get that fish out. And speaking of that, there are a lot of places on the river where I know there's probably a lot of big fish in there. You just can't get to them. It's so snaggy and tree infested that anytime you put a bait down, you're just going to get snagged, or that fish is going to wrap around the log. And it's really frustrating knowing there's fish there and you can't target them.
No doubt. So what are you basically for line? Are you going monofilament or primarily for flatheads? Are you using braid?
I use all braid, even for my leader. So I like to use a short leader, probably 12 to 15 inch leader, and I'll use the same line as my main line. And the only reason I'm using a leader is just kind of to separate my hook from the bait. And I just use a sliding sinker. And so when that fish grabs it, it'll basically like a large Carolina rig or Lindy rig, you know, that sinker will slide as that fish picks it up, and it doesn't really maybe feel the weight of that sinker. And that's really the only reason I use a leader. I know some guys that'll run a sinker right down to their hook. They don't even use a leader, and then put a bait on their
right,
like that. So there's definitely a lot of options. You can even catch flatheads on bobbers. And John, the guy I fish with quite a bit, he'll throw a – they actually make like bobbers out of like these pool noodles, just, you know, kind of cut them down. And they offer a lot of buoyancy and, you know, surface area to keep that bait afloat. And if we'll pull up to like a big eddy or something, and if he knows the depth of this flat, you know, he'll just toss it out and that bobber will just – circle around by shore, and all of a sudden I'll just boom, and kind of like the channel catfish, you know, and then that bobber will take off towards deep water. And if you've ever seen Jaws and see what that barrel looks like when Jaws is taking that barrel, it looks exactly like that.
That's really, really cool. So you can get like more in-depth information by going to your favorite newsstand and getting the May issue of In Fisherman. Like I said in the intro, that is Darren right there. And if you go to, let's see here, go to 48, I believe. I have it folded, the page folded here. Look at this. There's Darren with a massive flathead catfish. So,
and that John I was talking about that used the bobbers, he actually took that picture. That was a really good picture he took. He's kind of an amateur photographer. So, yeah, that turned out really well.
Yeah, so he's it's just, and that's like the preferred way to hold them, right? For pictures, like, so their back is towards the camera.
Yeah, I mean the popular photo is, you know, you grab the lips, you know, and you hold them up like that. Well, when you get a really big fish like that, you're putting a lot of stress on the rest of the body of that fish. And we've caught fish with the jaws have been broken from people holding it like that way.
So no kidding.
Any big fish you can hold, you know, horizontally, it's going to be much better for that fish, especially if you intend to release that thing. So the Minnesota DNR has been releasing some things about fish handling, which was nice to see, you know, like these big sturgeon, these big cats. Just handle them horizontally whenever you can. That's always going to be the best bet for those fish.
Those big fish, that's the standard way to hold them. You will be murdered in the muskie world if you hold a muskie vertically. Gotta hold them horizontally. Big fish, just a great rule of thumb, hold them horizontally. But what was that like, you know, getting in Fisherman? I'm sure you're like me, you grew up on In Fisherman. It's just like, I was, you know, still this day, I mean, Doug Stang, he's writing. I think he's one of the greatest outdoor writers of all time, at least for sure in fishing. I feel that way. But In Fisherman to me is like the pinnacle in freshwater, you know, multi-species freshwater fishing. So to see yourself, you know, on the cover of In Fisherman, that's really, really cool. Man, I saw this at the airport. And I was like, hell yeah, Darren. I was really, really happy for you.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, we're probably about the same age. So growing up, you know, when we were younger, that's all you had was magazines and VCR tapes. And, you know, you just didn't have stuff at your fingertip to just, you know, research and watch all the time. When this magazine came out, whatever it was, monthly or whatever, I would read that thing cover to cover, back and forth. And, you know, I'd sit at my grandparents' cabin and he had a subscription and that was all I had. You know, when I wanted to learn how to do something, that was my resource. So it was, to me, that was the best magazine that was available. And you mentioned Doug Stange. He wrote a couple books. I bought his books and I had one signed by him, you know, and I'm just kind of embedded in that world when I'm younger. When I got the invite to do a little interview for that, I jumped at the chance I actually got a little emotional when I seen it, you know, because you think about, you know, being in the magazine someday and there you are. And obviously it's what it is now is just a small, you know, portion of what it was way back when. You know, it's, you know, we're in a digital world right now, so it doesn't mean a whole lot to maybe other people or people growing up now, but to me, I mean,
I think it's awesome, Darren. I think it's awesome, dude. You should be very proud. Like, you know, I mean, In Fisherman's all about authoritative sources, and you know your deal. It makes perfect sense that you would be in that. So the In Fisherman of the 80s when, you know, you would like, it was huge. It was that thick. And it was amazing, like those magazines. But it's still something to be very proud of. So I'm very happy for you, and it was a treat to see that you were on the cover here.
I appreciate that, but it, the way I look at it is like, I don't know. I've had to run my mouth a lot just to, you know, get the attention in order to, you know, get the opportunity to do that. So I kind of don't see it as like a trophy or something like that, you know, because there's so many more better fishermen that deserve to be there. They just don't either they don't want the attention or they, you know, they just.
Well, people need a source of information. They need someone, and you're a great educator. Seriously, I'm not trying to blow smoke. You are a great source of information. I've learned a ton from you. There's people that don't want to give out information, or they're just not comfortable, you know, being on camera, or just, you know, there's a lot of people that are very shy. And but it's important that people like yourself that know how to catch these fish know, you know, that they're, you know, you're sharing information. So that's a service. It really is. Don't take, you know, don't sell yourself short, or you know, it's important for people coming into the sport to learn from guys like you that have been doing it. So yeah, there's always going to be someone better, but you are providing, you're a guy that's on the water, you know, you run a successful guide business. I want to get into that here shortly, but you know, you've got experience. So that is valuable. So just don't sell yourself short on that.
Yeah. I just like to let guys know that there's guys out there that no one's ever heard about before. And I completely look up to them, you know, like I'm always amazed at some of these guys, you know, spending so much time out in the river catching these big fish. So, and people don't hear about these guys. They're out there. Trust me.
So tell me about your guide business. So you got Three Rivers Fishing Adventures. You're doing catfish and sturgeon on the Minnesota, Mississippi, and the St. Croix. Tell me how you started. What's it like being a guide?
It actually has turned out a lot better than I expected. I at one point I said I would never do that. You know, I don't want to ruin my love of fishing by turning it into a job or a business. And, you know, one day my wife was just like, you know, if you're going to be out there all the time, you might as well start taking some people out there and actually, you know, turning it into a little side business, you know. And the one thing with the river systems up here is they're under federal jurisdiction. So you do need a captain's license in order to guide for it. And that kind of keeps the competition down a little bit, actually, because people just don't want to go through all the trouble and expense of doing it. It's not an easy task, to say the least, but she encouraged me to do it. She said, go do it. We'll get you in the class and get all the needed equipment you need and requirements and insurance and, you know, just put it out there and see if you get any business. So I did that one off season during the winter and just kind of put it out there and see what would happen. And it has snowballed pretty good. Like I'm to the point where I could probably do it full time if I wanted to. There's
that's
enough
awesome, dude.
Interest and interest. And that's kind of a scary transition for me, you know, going from I have a really good full time job. I work at a good company. I work at Abbott Medical and you know, it's hard giving up a good job like that with benefits and everything and vacation and making that leap. But I love it out there. So that is something, you know, I have considered to do it just because everything I've watched and learned says you should be doing what you love to do. So,
well, the other reality, too, is you've been, you know, as far as making money on it, like, you know, you've had a YouTube channel for a long time. And I know two guys that we kind of started, you know, social media around the same time, and they're making money off their YouTube channels. Catfish is a great way. It's very popular on YouTube. You know, they're the kayak catfish. You know, and there's a number of guys that are doing well catfishing, you know, with their YouTube channel. So, I mean, that would be an option too. You know, you could, I think you do really, really well if you wanted to go that route.
Yeah. What I found with the YouTube thing is, so kind of the two ways to be successful is you either do videos, kind of like instructional or how-to videos that people will always come back to watch. Throughout the years, you'll have a video, you know, 10 years later, it'll still be relevant. People will come back to watch it. Or you're doing something like three times a week and it turns into a full-time job and you become a personality. You know, there's kind of two ways to do that from what I've found. And right now, I haven't been able to jump into either one of them. So I just put up a video every now and then and try to keep it relevant and hope the algorithm grabs it every now and then is all you can hope for, I guess. But as far as the guide thing, the one thing I did find out about the guide thing is it's not necessarily about catching fish or catching the biggest fish or being able to catch fish all the time. It's more of a people thing, you know, being personable and listening to people, and you almost kind of turn into like a counselor on the water, you know, and, and showing people a good time and engaging with them. And sometimes it doesn't even matter if you catch fish, if people are just out spending time with their family or, you know, getting away from the daily grind, you know, sometimes that's more important than catching fish. So I found that to be kind of surprising and enjoyable at the same time.
No, that's the sign of a great guide is that, you know, I've known some guides that, you know, multi-species guides that they would get kind of, and they're well-known. I'm not going to name any names, one in particular, but he kind of had a reputation for getting frustrated. And this guy was like, everybody wanted to you know, be guided by this guy, but he would get frustrated with his guests, you know, at times. And so it is really important to be a people person. If you can have, if you can be a people person and then also be a hell of an angler, kudos to you. That's a great combination to have because, boy, you really like dealing with, especially if you have a successful guide business, you're dealing with a lot of different personalities. Being able to handle those different personalities and just being chill and still putting them on fish, that's a great combo.
The way I look at it is it's their trip, it's their night, whatever they want to do, whatever they're happy with. If they want to pull a boat up to shore and look for rocks or mushrooms or, you know, whatever, yeah. They want to run 10 miles back to the ramp to use the bathroom, it's their night, you know, like we can catch fish whenever, you know, like I want to make their night enjoyable. You know, it's that's why I call it adventures, because it's usually an adventure one way or another. So that's the way I look at it. And that's kind of why I kind of rolled in my unconventional tipping policy as well too. I kind of looked at it as what would I want to do if I hired a guide, and I don't even know if I've hired a guide. Maybe a couple times I've hired a guide, but when I go out, I just kind of want to know. I want a set cost, a flat fee. I don't have to worry about, you know, am I tipping them enough? Am I tipping them too much, you know, or is he doing this only because of a tip? And so what I did is I just wiped out a tipping policy completely from my fees. So I just do a flat fee, and I refuse all tips, and I've given back several $100 bills before.
Wow.
So,
no kidding. Wow. That's awesome of you to do that.
I know it's a little unconventional and people ask why I do that, but it's just one of the things that I decided I was going to do from the beginning, and it's kind of carried forward here. So
not only are you operating a successful guiding business, you're also, running a number of tournaments, and you're volunteering with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Go into that. Like, talk about these tournaments, and then what are you doing volunteer-wise for the state of Minnesota?
So the tournaments have – it's – a whole evolution. The first catfish one I started was back in like 2007. It was just kind of a friendly thing. We call it King of the Cats, and it just has evolved, and it's gotten to the point where there's probably like 100 people that do it now, and it runs throughout the season. And one of the things that has really made it easy is this Fish Donkey app that, as it turns out, a guy I went to school with developed the app. And I've been using that, and it has really made administering these contests a lot easier. Basically, you take a picture of the fish, show the measurement, take a picture holding it, enter it, and it's your five biggest fish of the season. And what I didn't expect is how competitive it was going to be. Like, some of these contests end up being, you know, down to the quarter inch at the end of the year of everyone's, you know, to win this thing, you got to catch, you know, like 5 50-pound flatheads in order to win it. So, and the channel cats, you probably got to catch like 5 20 to 30 pounders. So it's really competitive, but it's fun to see all these big fish. And the best part is they're documented, you know, on this app, and you can go back and look at these fish anytime you want. And there's no questioning how big they are, because the measurement's right there. Everyone gets to look at everyone's measurements. So I found that really good for the contest. I do the same thing for sturgeon, King of the Sturgeon. So I do a one in the spring, one in the fall and the winter as well for the sturgeon. So that's kind of the contests I run. I have each year I usually do one on the water as well. We do a live catfish weigh-in contest. We usually do that out on Pool 2, and that's coming up here in mid-June. And speaking of that, maybe I'll mention, I'll kind of maybe break a little news here on your podcast. But so we have got two lines passed. So now we're going to be able to fish two lines on Pool 2 of the Mississippi.
Wow.
One of the Mississippi and also the Minnesota River. So, and I was, most of these fishing laws, when they're, when they go into effect, it's usually the following year. And I was, I'm not going to name any names, but I, one of the guys I was talking to, he's fully engaged in this bill and knows what's going on. He told me it was going live July 1st of the, wow, this year. So
that is fantastic.
And I haven't really said anything about that really a lot. I posted a little bit in my group, but it
you
looks like
you heard it here. You heard it here first. We've got exclusives from Detro.
You heard it here first, and I've been working on that a long time. Not just me, but other people within the catfish community. Brian Clowitter, who was also used to be a guide, and Steve DeMars. We went to the legislature. We testified. You know, we worked with the DNR, and we wanted to get it statewide, and they just would not go for that. So this was kind of the compromise, and now we're going to have it. So
that is fantastic. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for all that you're doing in that area just to work with the state. You know, here the DNR in Minnesota is very strict as compared to a lot of other states. And so, you know, I know there's a lot of work that has to be done. And I know you're active in that. And on behalf of all cat fishermen, you know, just sturgeon fishermen, cat fishermen, thank you for all the work that you've done there.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, the you mentioned the the volunteer thing. So what that was, as I mentioned it before, they have this these species groups, and kind of the first one, the inaugural catfish group, I was part of that, and I think it was probably 7 or 8 of us. We sat in on this group and we met and talked about different issues that we would like to see push forward, you know, kind of a stakeholder type thing. And, you know, we brainstormed and came up with some things that could have made catfishing better. And one of the things was on the St. Croix, you could never catch like suckers and drum or whatever and use them, cut them up and use them for bait. It was always kind of against the rules. So that was one of the things we got changed, was using rough fish as you catch them on the water to cut them up. And I mentioned the shad thing with the cast net, and kind of a little bit before that, Brian Clowitter worked on the bullhead law, which we were able to get changed. So, you know, the size of bullheads you could use in transportation, and little by little, we're chipping away at things that we want. And this two line thing was a big one, at least for the, especially
that's
the Minnesota River, you know, like
that is so awesome, dude.
There's guys all the way up to, so it goes all the way to Granite Falls. So like some of these catfish contests, like someone commented, you know, that this is going to be just in time for their derby days down in Franklin. And that just, you know, kind of brought us
fantastic. Smile on my face, you know? Yeah, that is absolutely fantastic. That is so great to hear. And thanks for breaking it here on Another Fishing Podcast.
Yeah, now I let's just hope that the governor hasn't signed it yet. So
oh, no.
He said he's going to sign it. But
come on, Walls. Come on, Walls. Okay, so I should probably not go. I don't want to get too political here. I'm trying to stay out of the political realm here on Another Fishing Podcast. I've gotten political before. I'm trying to, like, I get so wound up in politics that it's like, okay, I need this as my release where I'm not talking about, you know, it's anyway. But I really, and I know that's like, that's a lot of work. So I really appreciate you doing that and working with those, you know, fellow fishermen to get that done. That's a huge, huge deal.
The politics is so frustrating, like especially how they get these laws passed. You know, they basically take everything and bundle them together. So whatever you're supporting, there's always a portion you're not supporting. And it's just it hurts my head to think about some of the things that passed in order to get this. Like, I don't know. It's just people tell me that was a bad thing. Well, yeah, maybe it was a bad thing, like, overall, but that's the only way we're going to get this thing passed is getting it bundled with some bad things. And I just, you know, I got to take the lumps. You know, there's some things where, you know, you're not going to be able to have a wolf season. They threw that in there. They added crossbows. You're going to be able to use crossbows now for deer hunting, even during the archery season. There's just a whole myriad of things that were
bundled. Isn't that crazy how they do that? They bundle stuff up. Like, you know, they do that federally too, and then they got bills that are just gigantic that no one reads. But that's a discussion. Oh, Darren, let me tell you, that's a discussion for another time. I could go off on that stuff, and my blood pressure will start to rise, and that's not good. I have high cholesterol, yada, yada, yada. But I appreciate your time. I don't want to take much more of your time. And my wife, we are going on an evening pontoon ride. So I've got to get ready. I got to get ready for that. So I'm very excited. But I want to, before we go, though, and thanks again for doing this, man. I've loved this conversation, and you've always been so much fun to talk to. So your information, you're very articulate. You got a ton of a wealth of knowledge about catfish and sturgeon, and I just like you know, downloading all the information from your brain, essentially. But tell people how they can find you. And you know how they can find you, your socials, but then also just promote the hell out of your guide business, man, because you got a great thing going there.
Yeah, so I mean, the easiest way to find me is on my website. So the site is Three Rivers Fishing Adventures. That's with the number three, and there's just a list of items there. Shows my services or whatever. I'm really active on my Facebook. I have a Facebook page as well, Three Rivers Fishing Adventures. I'm posting videos and pictures there all the time. New information. I'll probably be posting something about this two line thing. I have a YouTube channel, Three Rivers Fishing Adventures. You see the pattern here. So yeah, you go there. I've had that actually, if my YouTube channel, I've had that since 2007, I think. So yeah, I'm kind of getting to be an old timer there on my YouTube channel. But
I learned how to fillet catfish from that YouTube channel, just so everybody knows. If you want to learn how to fillet, he's got a great filleting catfish video on there. That's got, I think you got like a billion views on it now.
Yeah, that somehow YouTube got a hold of that one, and that one's over a million. And speaking of that, I just got into this Facebook Reels thing. Like, they sent me this thing, like, you can collect, you know, whatever, ad revenue or whatever. So I signed up for that, and I've just been putting up these random things that I find sort of interesting. And the other day I put one up of my friend John's got this really nice West Coast, you know, jet boat, and we were coming through Shakopee, and there was a snag, and the current was just blasting through there. And I was like, this is kind of interesting as he's putting it up on the trailer. So I just, all the video is his boat turning, going onto the trailer, going up onto the trailer. And it's like a 20-second video. For whatever reason, that one got over a million views. Like, it's just like, yeah. I don't know. They get a hold of these things and share it, and it gets on the roll and people see it. And I don't know. Like I said, you just got to keep throwing things up there, I guess.
Yeah. So yeah, that little tip right here, Instagram and YouTube are competing big time with TikTok. So they're competing with them, with their Instagram. It's called Reels. So it's a vertical video. You know, you're shooting it like this with your phone and it's only a minute or less. Same thing. They call them shorts on YouTube, but both of those companies they're really fighting with Instagram, so they're promoting Reels big time. So do Reels a lot. What is my cat is going crazy? I might have a cat in heat right now.
Maybe that was my cat.
No, we got, it's quite a zoo here. But yeah, it's real. I can't tell you enough. It's kind of like been a shot in the arm for angling uploaded our YouTube channel. So it's that's great advice. Do those reels, and it's just basically you want to do a reel that's just, it's dynamic, it's interesting. People have short attention spans. You just want to get their attention quickly, and that's a great way to do it. So is there anything else you'd like to promote, Darren, or anything else you'd like to say? And I'm just tickled that we had this conversation.
Nothing I can think of other than I appreciate the invite, and I'm not really a big podcast guy. There's a few guys that I kind of watch, and I appreciate the effort they put into it. And you're one of them. So I was glad to be here.
Oh, man. Thank you, dude. Yeah, no, you're fantastic. I've gleaned a ton of information from you. And so I say this every time, but I really, really, we need to go fishing. I need to get with the problem is that I'm gone for like 6 days filming Major League Fishing events, and I get back and I kind of just decompress, and I kind of I'll curl up in the fetal position for a while. And so I can kind of be like a recluse, you know, but I really need to break that. It's just can be kind of a crazy schedule, but I really, really would love to fish with you. Maybe we can do a video or something, but would love to collaborate with you on you know, YouTube or whatever, but would just in general just love to fish with you sometime.
Absolutely. Maybe we could get up and do that channel cat thing. I think that would make a fun video again.
And you know, I got my boat, I'm closer. So, you know, we should definitely try to make that happen.
Sounds good.
So, yeah. I'm going to reach out to you on that. And, because yeah, that's probably something I'm going to be doing quite often and doing videos on, because I think it's just so much fun and I think people would enjoy it. So, thank you, brother. Again, check Darren out. Check out ThreeRiversFishing.com, right? ThreeRiversFishing.com.
ThreeRiversFishingAdventures.com.
ThreeRiversFishingAdventures.com. And this guy's the man. Darren, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. And like I said, I've learned a ton from this guy. Check out the May issue of In Fisherman. That's him right there. Right there. The man with a big flathead. So a lot, you can get more in depth too with how he's catching these giant sumo flatheads. So thanks again, Darren. Really enjoyed it, brother.
Thank you, Greg. Have a good night on that pontoon. Get some bug spray.
Oh, yeah. The mosquitoes are out.